I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 452. Jerks are good guys, thugs are bad guys, and I'm a pretty girl.
Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And your voice is cracking.
And I just hit puberty.
And you just had your balls dropped. No, you didn't. We've been talking a lot.
And talking a little.
And talking then the little. And yelling and screaming and going, oh my god, a bunch. Why? Because we went to B-Fig. The Boston Festival of Indie Games. Yep, we're going to be talking about what we did, what we saw, and what we touched, what we didn't touch. And some of the things we didn't touch at B-Fig this year at MIT. I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed the day.
Me too.
And it's been a little bit since I've, like, consistently been at B-Fig because of where it falls in the year. It usually falls during my first fall illness of the season.
I'm so glad you ended up making it this year because
every other year that, like, when it falls, it's right when the temperature does its big shift, and I always get sick. Like, whenever the temperature shifts 10 degrees in a day, I get a fever. And so we had a couple of years where that happened and I was puking my brains out and I was like, I can't do it. And Panda got mad at me.
Well, because then there went our day, and it sucked.
Aw, poor Panda. Puberty's gonna end soon, I promise.
I hope so.
But this year, no sickness for me. So Panda and KBD from B3 Crew, No Borders, No Race, if you haven't heard about it, get on it, went to the MIT campus to spend the day, and literally the day, we were there from 9 to 5.
Yeah, we were. We were there for quite some time.
Playing a bunch of new games from independent developers, first-time developers. We spent a chunk of time at Tabletop. I think this is the year that I spent the most time ever at Tabletop.
Yes.
And I'll get into my thoughts about Tabletop there. But I figure, since Panda's losing her voice, I guess I'm going to have to do like a big chunk of the talking.
I'm going to try my best.
You are, because the first thing I want to talk about is Rain World. And you know this game way more than I do. And as a matter of fact, I probably wouldn't have even stopped to check out the game if you hadn't brought me over and introduced me to it. So why don't you tell the people a little bit about Rain World, who's making it, and we could talk about some of the awesome stuff that we know about it.
So the great thing about Rain World is that I know two of the people who have been involved with it, because they're also a chiptune band that plays a lot in Cambridge, and I'm talking about Bright Primate, and that is James and Lydia Primate, and they're totally the coolest people and the chillest people on the planet.
They are, in fact, I think, the chillest people on the planet. I thought that I was the chillest person, but no, they are actually, in fact, more chill than me.
They are super chill, and I mean, I saw Rain World a little bit last year at B-Fig because they were showing their base build. And they were only showing multiplayer stuff last year. And this year, they actually were showing more of the world in the single player aspect of it. And the most interesting thing about Rain World is that you are these animals called slug cats, which are soft and plushy and probably the brightest thing on the screen.
Seriously, the slug cat is the most adorable thing, and I need a plushie or three of it in my life.
And, well, anyway, so,
because it's a snow white cat slug. So think two front and paws of a cat, back end of a slug.
Slug. Super cute. And all the slug cat wants to do is pretty much just survive the harsh ecosystem that the world has kind of now created. And I mean, these are like Razor Hill from like Gears of War, or at least in my mind, that's what I envision. And last year when you played the game, there was a timer and you had to evade all the other harsh animals that have adapted to this universe who want to eat you by trapping other slug cats who are not you into getting eaten by them, or keeping them from shielding themselves from the harsh rain that's coming at the end of the timer.
You know, the mass hysteria.
And it would bring out the most fiercest competitors. I played with KBD, and our friends, the Fleming brothers from Wicked Anime, were at B-Fig, and we all jumped in on a game, and not even a minute in did, like, the gloves come off and, like, the teeth came out. And, like, as soon as we walked away from it, it was, like, this weird, totally weird out-of-body experience. So I don't want to say that I played through these two levels, but I experienced two different levels in the game, and one of them was showing off this new water mechanic. And in a 2D scrolling platforming universe, water can be quite deadly.
Yes.
Especially in Rain World in particular, because not only do you, one, have to worry about the danger Razor Hail type rain animals that want to eat you, but now you also have to worry about these larger than life slugs that will attach themselves to your little slug cat.
They're leeches.
And make you heavy and will drag you down
and
will
make you
slow and will drink your blood.
And make your health not
healthy.
Yeah.
And through that particular area, I was not very careful. And I had about like 9 of these leeches.
You tried to Leroy Jenkins it before.
And sometimes you have to be careful and slow. And sometimes you have to, you know, go by your instinct and avoid the bigger danger over the little ones. But that isn't to say that little dangers can't pile up, which is exactly what happened to my slug cat in that particular instance.
And so what's really interesting is when you get covered in leeches, they stay on you and you have to shake and move around furiously to shake them off. If you can't shake all of them off in a certain amount of time, some end up just staying stuck on you and eventually fall off on their own after they've got their fill. So it's really behooves you to not just be like, oh, I can be in the water because the water is safe as I traverse this land, because it's not. Leeches will get you. So pretty much there's not a lot of places where you're safe in Rain World.
No, there's really. And I mean, I think one of the really interesting things for its aesthetic is that, you know, it's kind of got that 8-bitty, maybe even 16-bitty vibe.
Yes, it's more 16-bit.
And the areas in which your slug cat can hide are not the most easily detectable. So, you know,
the world is dark and dreary.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you can go through these pipes, but they're not the most recognizable. Like, they're not easily given to you. Like, they want you to explore the whole map to figure out where there are pipes that you can get into, and theoretically to see where those pipes will go. So you're constantly scanning the screen, if not only for dangers, but for ways of survival. So, like, it really does put that adrenaline in you, especially when you are playing that multi, you know, against 3 other people who want to kind of do you in. No music just yet. I mean, they're still kind of working on getting all of the worlds right and the feel of the controller right, which is completely and utterly fine. But they're amazing, so I know that they will do quite well. Rain World was bought by Adult Swim Games, so
yeah,
you will see.
Super cool.
You'll be able to experience it in that fashion.
Wouldn't be surprised if it came to console.
I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't be. So I'd keep my eye out, console fans, and wait and see, because so many wonderful things are coming out of Adult Swim Games, period. And the fact that Rain World is a part of that big mix is more than awesome. And I mean, if Bright Primate would put some of their music in it, it would soar. I already know. It would like soar higher than an eagle. And but keep your eyes out. And there is a kickstarting page, even though they got more than they were looking to hopefully get Rain World off the ground. And I see plushies in the future too. So I can't wait to own my very own slug cat because I want one or six.
Truth. What I think is really cool about this game is that it very much reminds me of games that I used to play when I was younger. You know, because it is a really solid platformer to begin with, and it's got the 16-bit aesthetic like you talked about, it makes me feel like old school Mario and Zelda type games in the whole trying to figure things out, because there's a lot of puzzle elements to it. You know, you have various enemies that are shy, and so they retreat into the world. And you don't necessarily know as you come up to him whether it's going to be friend or foe.
Oh, man, that kind of spooked me. I was like, it has eyes! And I, like, freaked out. And then as soon as I got close to it, it backed off. And I was like, oh, okay, you see me as the predator and you're the prey. I get it.
And yet there are other enemies that are blatantly going to attack you, eat you, thrash you, and just make your life a living hell. And trying to figure out ways to navigate around them through crawling through small crevices and hiding in different places. It definitely has a little bit of a Mega Man and a bit of a Metroid feel to it, with the puzzle piece on top. So you have to think and you have to be clever. And I think once the music is in and there, it'll just add even more to the mood. But it was really interesting to watch you play the game and talk with the developers about it and how long of a process it's been and how excited they were to, you know that Adult Swim Games has picked that up. And Adult Swim Games, they do a chunk of things that do come out for console for sure, but they also create and release a ton of games for mobile. And I could definitely see this game being something that I would play.
Oh, absolutely.
On my iPad or on my tablet or even on my phone with a good, you know, touch control. And what I'm curious to see happen, we didn't get to talk with them about it. I don't think that there are a lot of people in the room yet even thinking about it, but now with the release of the new Apple TV, where you're going to be able to have games on your Apple TV with that motion sensor and allow for multiplayer with other people using their iOS devices as their controllers, you know, I would love to see Rainworld come to the Apple TV, because I think that would definitely, both on the multiplayer side, but also on the single player campaign side, be a great game to play on an Apple TV, because it's perfectly designed for it. You know, the controls are not super, super crazy. I don't think every button on the controller was mapped to an action. I think only the key buttons, the top shoulder buttons, and the four buttons, gel buttons, were mapped. So I think that that would be something that would translate very easily to the more simplistic and touch controls of using an iPhone or iPad or something as a controller in addition to the Apple remote. So one of the threads that I had in my head as I was looking at various games when we were at the show was, ooh, is this something that would be fun on Apple TV? Or, ooh, is this something that could work really well on Apple TV, especially with its multiplayer component? And Rainworld is definitely up there. So, like you said, I would not be surprised if it came to console. I would be more surprised if it didn't end up on console. But what I'd really like to see is for it to be available on Apple TV and for it to be available on iOS. And with Adult Swim Games involved, it probably will. And one of the things that you can count on, because Adult Swim Games is involved, is that it's definitely going to get a nice marketing push behind it when it's ready to go. It is definitely going to be a game that has great production value. They've got a really fantastic team behind it. We are probably going to have them on the show closer to launch for the game to talk more in depth about the whole process and what they loved and what they learned and what they hope people take away from playing the game. But if you haven't checked it out, make sure that you check it out. Like Panda said, they did do a Kickstarter. They reached their goal, which is why they've been working on the game so hard for so long. And dude, there needs to be a plushie line of all the characters, the good ones and the bad ones too, for this game. Because I was really impressed with it, and I didn't expect it to be as much fun as it was, and as puzzle challenging as it was. You know, watching you stumble trying to find, like, okay, is that a ledge I can stand on, or is that actually just part of
will
the background?
Will this support me? Will I fall through the world?
Right. Is
like, this... is this trying to set me up to feel safe when I really shouldn't? It... Very much like nature. Like, you never know what's going to work and what's not until you've put yourself out there to see, which...
And so you always feel a little bit cautious.
Always cautious. What are you talking about?
And it's a good thing because, you know, in a world where the environment is basically out to get you, you should feel cautious. And the game does a really good job of making the player cautious. You can't just go running into a space and think that you're going to be fine and be able to traverse the entire level. So Rain World by Rain World is out. The Kickstarter's already done. Like I said, they reached their funding and then some. But you can definitely check them out. Check out the website, some of the gameplay there. Keep your eye out because it's coming soon. And man, oh man, it's going to be a blast. I can't wait to own it.
Oh.
Just in case I didn't make that clear, I am definitely buying this game.
And the plushies.
And the plushies. As soon as there are plushies, I will buy the plushies. My dog will probably destroy one, so I really will need to get two.
Because Eshdog the fourth.
You know, because all things that are on her level must be destroyed or eaten. And if they can't be eaten, they must be destroyed. So that's just how she works. But Rain World was definitely a great way to start the show, and I really enjoyed it. Another game that I enjoyed was down in Tabletop. And this is another one that you introduced me to, Panda. I actually had not heard of the game. I didn't know about its Kickstarter or anything. But this was really a year that I was challenging myself to spend more time in Tabletop than just in the digital showcase. Because most years that I've gone to BFIG, I have primarily stayed and run through all the games in the digital showcase area. And that's been about it. And that's pretty much, I hung my hat on that, and I was done. And we were all happy people and went to a restaurant and drank drinks and ate food and went, yay, we spent the day playing video games and now to do work. But this year, I really wanted to try and spend either equal time in both showcases, or if I was going to spend the majority of the day in one place or another, I was going to make sure that I spent that time in Tabletop. And I think that for me, it was a great way to organize my day because I had a blast and I did spend more time in Tabletop than I did in the digital showcase this year. But the game that you introduced me to is a game called Henchmen.
Hell yeah, Henchmen!
Now, I don't play a lot of Tabletop games. I did when I was a kid. I have played more Dungeons and Dragons than I probably should have at some points in time in my academic career, but that's okay. But I do enjoy card games and board games a lot. My difficulty is typically finding a good group of people to regularly play these games with. I've moved a bunch back when I lived in DC. I had quite a few nerdy friends who enjoyed the card games, and so we would make those pop off after work and things like that. But as I've come home, most of my friends up here have children of their own. They don't have time for game nights. And so, crickets, crickets, crickets. I haven't played Cards Against Humanity in months, that kind of thing. But I love really interesting, fun card games. And that's what Henchmen is. So the concept is fairly simple. The players try to amass an army of henchmen. And there are various types of henchmen. There are thieves, there are bullies, there are knights, there are magical henchmen. And you have on your turn the option to do two actions, which any type of taking of something is an action. So you can either take a job, and jobs vary by how many henchmen are needed to do the job, or how many of a certain type of henchmen are needed to do the job. And so you work for basically a mob boss.
You work for the boss.
Yes, the boss. And you're amassing your henchmen and you take your actions, and your actions could either be to take a card to get an additional henchman, which you turn over immediately so everybody who's playing the game can see what kind of henchmen you have and how many you have. Some henchmen are stronger than others. They have more henchiness.
Henchiness.
And then you also have the ability to take gear. And gear is basically your buffs or your ability to mess with other players. So you have accessories, which basically can buff your henchmen so they can give them more strength or they can give them more of their own henchiness. And you have instants, which you can only play during that turn. So when the turn is over, it gets burned and is put in a burn pile. And the goal is to do jobs, make money, keep the boss happy until the game ends. And so you have a river of jobs that are turned over. And I think it's like 6 jobs at a time or 7.
Well, they have the row of about 6 jobs. And the game does not completely end until there are 3 super jerks out. So super jerks are essentially
they're the goody-goody. Exactly.
And they will, one, eat up a spot for a job. So once you have 3 of them out, there's only 3 jobs that are out. But once they're out, the game stops. And super jerks, when they show up, will kill half of the henchmen who have entered into the thug life, which is when you tap the card and you turn it sideways. So in order for a henchman to go on a job, you have to flip them sideways, kind of,
and
like
put them into the thug life.
And they go in the thug life. And when super jerks come out, they take out half of them. So if you've got about 10 of them out there because you just did a big job and a super jerk comes out, you're losing 5 of them.
Yep.
But they got the job done before the super jerk came out. So, like, they...
You still got your money.
You still got your money. And, I mean, the money isn't all that great in the thug life because most of these jobs range between 2 or 3, it seems, money. I'm sure there are jobs
that are more, too.
So, through the round, because depending on how many people you have, there's a little marker that dictates who the first person is. And once a full turn has gone, if no one has done a job, you have to tell the boss. And that can issue a table-wide punishment.
Yep.
Or can target the people who have not taken jobs. It really depends on what the punishment happens to be. And some of them can be as simple as killing your favorite henchman or killing your henchiest henchman or something a little bit more involved for the player themselves, which in our encounter with henchmen this past BFIG was, before every action, every player had to say, "I'm a pretty girl."
Or they would lose half
their henchmen. They'd have to kill a henchman every time they forgot. So each turn for each person is about 2 actions, unless you use your money that you can accrue in the game to buy more actions. So if I had 2 additional dollars and decided to use them, and in 2 of those rounds did not state quite loudly that I was a pretty girl, I could lose henchmen that I would need for the jobs. But it's completely fun. I would say the average game is probably going to run you about 20, 30 minutes. So it's a decent length game. All of the characters that you see in the game have strong resemblances to other things.
Entities in pop culture, but they are not them.
Not those things. Which is fun and not fun. I believe during our game, somebody had a henchman that looked very similar to a very mean man from Germany. And one of the little kids, and this is the cutest thing, because this game is completely approachable by people our age and even younger people. So, like, this could be very good.
It's totally a family game.
For families of all shapes and sizes. And this little boy saw this henchman that a friend of ours played, and his first reaction was, "He does not look like a very nice man." So, of course, all of us who have had history and have been through high school clearly know who this is or resembles. Yep. And we each got to have our own little private chuckle about, "You are right, kid. He is not a very nice man."
Yep.
And it was absolutely fun. And, I mean, it's got a Kickstarter right now. And it's like... $640 away from their goal. And I mean, when I saw them last year, I was literally like, "I'm going to back you." And then I ran into some money problems, so that didn't happen. And this year, I'm going to make it known by backing them, because this game was fun. The DFL crew, they are amazing, and they're funny, and they're personable, and they always attract people. Like, there was a line. Like, people would come up and be like, "Oh, is the game almost over?" "No, I'll wait." And they would come back. Like, they got a lot of traffic, and they clearly deserved it.
Well, it's super fun, especially when you have, you know, a good group of people to play the game. I think that, you know, you really want to have at least four people play the game.
Yeah,
not
the game
more.
Is for 3 to 6. And it's really kind of a semi-cooperative because you can dig people around or not. But it's semi-cooperative, resource management, pool building, because you are trying to build a pool of henchmen, and kind of an in-your-face take, that kind of style game. I actually think it's probably best, if I had to guess, with like five players, even though I think the max is 6, only because I think with even numbers, you might be able to kind of, not necessarily break the game, but make dealing with other players cooperatively a lot better. I feel like if it's even, you'd have a better chance of finding someone who's going to help you with a job as opposed to that odd mentality. And that's just me personally. Totally, totally worth investing in. I have tried to pimp this game, like last year, like gangbusters. It was on my Twitter, like every hour. I dropped it on my Facebook, like maybe once every other day. And if someone asked about it, I would just talk it up and down until I was blue in the face. And for a black lady, that is kind of hard.
Not as hard as you think. But I do think that this is a great game if you're into card games, party games, to back. We'll be sure to include the link to the Kickstarter in the details on our website for this particular podcast. But I like the mechanic of being able to do deals. I do think that this is a great family game, but it's also a really good, fun party game. Like, if you're having a game night at your place, Henchman is a great game to kick off the night with, you know, because you have the ability to play any of your gear cards, those instants and those accessories, at any point in time. So it doesn't even have to be your turn if you want to play them. So you can, if you see someone that is about to take a job because they have enough henchmen to do it and you want to mess with them and you have an instant that lets you take a henchman from someone, you can stop them before they do that job. Because ultimately the game ends when there are 3 super jerks on the table and we go around the table and find out who has the most money. And whichever person has the most money wins. If there's a tie between 2 people having the same amount of money, it's whoever has the most henchmen left that are not...
Well, it's the amount of henchness.
Yes.
That you have.
There are so many different ways to win the game, and there's so many different strategies that you can do. You know, with little kids, probably they're not apt to do a whole lot of the making deals with each other in order to get
the job. Yeah, clearly it was shown through our game that the 2 youngest players...
Kids don't like playing with kids, because...
No, not even that, but that one girl didn't even want to team up with you to get that money.
Because she was smart. If
she was smart and didn't want you to get money.
She knew that if we did it, because I saw her doing the math in her head, she knew that I would still end up being a dollar ahead of her. So she was like, so I'd rather not do it and you be ahead of me. Like, she's trying to have the long game, but forgot that, you know, the player next to me had $6. So,
like you said, I will personally make sure that the link to the Kickstarter for this game is in the show notes below. It is completely, and like, I can't stress this enough, guys, because I mean, I've been spending maybe the last 2 years of my life starting to really get into board games and seeing what the deal is, because I have a bunch of friends who really love to get together and will board game, I should say, for hours. I've never before would attribute chunks of time to board games, like, because in my mind, back in the day, board games were Pretty Princess. And we're checkers. And
Chutes and Ladders is still the best board game ever.
But, and yeah, and like Sorry, and like these games that I would play for like a small chunk of time with my family because I was young and didn't have an attention span.
And now you're older and don't have an attention span.
I've never had an attention span. But I've now, because I dared myself to jump out of my comfort zone of being able to sit in front of a console for 8 hours and like throw myself into this whole element of gaming that I've known about but didn't really care to venture into. And now I honestly can't imagine being a gamer and not being versed in all aspects of different types of games. I feel more included than separated now since I've done it. So I was so glad that you like were curious to see what was going on in tabletop, because I know it's not primarily your thing if it's not Ka or Exploding Kittens or, you know, something of that nature, which, don't get me wrong, those games are both good in their own way and right. But there's so much more going on, and there's so much more innovation going on that clearly needs its own light to shine in and to show exactly what they got going, like what they got to offer. And it's a lot.
Well, there's a lot going on in tabletop for sure. And I don't think that necessarily if you don't explore tabletop, you're not a gamer or you're not well versed.
I'm not saying that, but I feel like I feel more included because there's so much more that I'm now looking towards for that entertainment that I've gotten from console gaming and PC gaming. Like, I like that I just have another chapter in my gaming book. I'm not saying, oh, I'm more of a gamer now that I do this, but I feel more open to me what constitutes games versus
I think
games.
What you're trying to get is that you just feel like more well-rounded.
Yeah.
There you go. And I think that can be true for a lot of people. Like, not everyone is going to love tabletop gaming.
No.
You know, and it's not for everyone, but I think that a really good party game is a good party game, whether it's on a console or whether it's on tabletop. A good party game is a good party game, and Henchman is definitely it. If I had more people around me that I knew that I could play with on the regular, I would definitely pick this game up because it's fun. And it's silly good fun, but you also have to be very, very strategic in it to really win. And so it can be very challenging, or it can just be blatant, just out there fun. And I love games that have that switch, that go from just party to, no, seriously, I'm going to beat you, I'm going to kick your ass, and I'm going to outthink you, and it's going to be awesome. And it's clever, and it's cute. You definitely, definitely need to check out Henchman. So thank you for introducing me to that.
You're welcome. I knew the minute that I saw them, because like we walked by them, and I'm like, oh my god! I'm like, it's Henchman. Henchman is that B-fig again. And like, I walked up and they remember me because I with the boys, and by the boys, I mean KBD and the Fleming brothers, last year got into a very, very heated, douchebaggy game that even the creator was like, I wasn't expecting you guys to go that way. And I'm like, we play to win. Like, when that red tinted glass, when those red tinted glasses come on, like, every man for themselves.
I mean, there's blood in the water for a reason, so there's that.
There's another game that I and yeah, I know. I'm just repeating you because when you say good things, I feel like they need to be repeated for some people to make sure it really gets into the dough of their brain.
Or sometimes you say things because you weren't listening to what I said and realized
that too, but not in this instance.
All right, so what else do you want to talk about?
So first, I want to quickly talk about a very interesting game that we encountered.
Things are interesting.
They are, because interesting does not necessarily mean, oh my god, it's good, or oh my god, it's bad, but it has elements that I feel deserve to be talked about.
Okay.
And in that, I'm going to talk a little bit about why the long face, because the minute we walked by this table,
okay,
the name alone, I was like, okay. Like, I instantly thought of a horse because, you know, horses have...
Right, you know, and the why the long face joke that everybody always tells when they get drunk.
Yeah.
Or they have a dad.
Exactly. And I was like, okay. And I mean, like, there was this boar head sitting at this table with, like, this fedora on. And I was like, okay, I'm intrigued.
And when I walked by, I thought, oh my gosh, that's got to be like a drawing game or something like that, where...
Like, I thought maybe it was going to be like a Pictionary or something to that nature.
Yeah.
And then I saw that there are these pictures of animals on the table. And I'm like, well, I'm like, it can't be a horse game because the minute a horse comes out, like, everyone's going to see the horse and like, why long face? But that's not the game at all. So literally all you need to play this game is obviously a collection of animal photos, which were generously provided by this lady from a natural museum and from a taxidermist. And the whole point of this game is you get several of your friends together and you have a board that has six slots and you put six of these photos out. And there's a dice mechanism. So you take a dice and you roll it in your little cup.
And that's why there's six slots, because dice typically have six sides, unless you're playing a dungeon game.
Right.
And you put the photos under
a number
from 1 to 6.
So, and once you've rolled the dice, you can choose to take a peek of it yourself and see what animal is sitting in that number slot. And you could choose to make the face, or you can open up to beauty pageant and have the other people who are playing with you see who can make the best face. And literally, I think there's a point system. I think the gentleman that I talked to, generally, it was you play until, one, your face hurts, or two, there are only 6 cards left in the box. I mean, I think it's a great icebreaker game for a party. Like, I think it's a great way to, like, if you've never hosted a game night at all and you're going to have people who, you know, are willing to come but you don't think are really into what may or may not be going down, and, like, just get everybody comfortable and laughing and relaxed and, like, ready to have a good time. This is totally the type of game that would do that, because the moment we sat down and the moment we really kind of got the premise of the game, there wasn't a moment where we weren't laughing or smiling or just genuinely happy to be sitting around making goofy faces at each other. It's not very complicated. I mean, the premise of the game is very, very simple.
I'll explain it like this. The game is a mimic game. And so when you say make the face, it's that you take a look at all of the faces of the animals that are on the table, and they're all in different poses because they're photos of these taxidermied animals very, very close up. And not in the best of lighting, because it looks like it was taken photos with, like, a camera, like, right in the face. So some of them are pretty scary and just really funny and just odd. And so when you are rolling the dice, you're doing so in a cup, kind of like Boggle style. So you take a peek and no one else at the table yet knows what animal is up for grabs. And so you can either determine, yeah, I can make that face and it would totally be worth it to try and see if someone can guess what face that you're making. And there's no turns, so people just yell it out. And whoever nails it, they get that photo of the animal and that point. Or you can do the beauty pageant version of it and tell everyone which animal they have to make the face of. And then you judge who is doing it the best, or so who best mimics that face. And then award them that point. So it's competitive, but not really, because everyone is...
It's fun competitive. Yeah. It's fun and competitive.
I mean, because everyone at the table is making faces at random points. It's really interesting to see people's interpretations of what various faces look like. And again, you stop either when your face hurts and you just can't go
Which can
anymore.
Completely happen if you're very committed to making the face.
You know, or when you run out of images. But what's also interesting is that there's a little bit of a learning component to the game, because there are plenty of animals that are going to pop up that most people are not aware of. You know, because these are all images that have been basically taken of all kinds of things in the wild that have been taxidermied. Some for private collection, some for display in museum. So there's a lot of variety. There are ocelots and otters and all kinds of things that don't even really exist. So there's a fun component to it. There's a learning component to it. And so it's definitely a great pickup, you know, play for 10 minutes or so. I would call it an icebreaker game.
It's absolutely an icebreaker.
To definitely get people, like, in the mood and loosened up, because you can't be stuffy, and you'll definitely get over your, ooh, I'm a wallflower, if you're at a party that has this game there. I think that it's definitely one that even some of the more reserved people, because at the time that I saw people playing it, one of the people at the table was obviously an older dad and definitely seemed kind of staunchy and was just kind of interested and thought that, I think because of the style of the cards, it was a National Geographic type game. So he was more curious about it. But he ended up, after a couple of rounds, coming out of his shell with everyone at the table and making some of the most ridiculous faces. So I do think that it is a great social game, a great icebreaker game. And I think that it's just cute all the way around. And again, if you're the type of person that wants to regularly put together a grouping of people, or just wants to have something around to maybe break the ice when you're, mixing your set of friends with your significant other set of friends for the first time, Why the Long Face would be a great game to pull out instead of Jenga. Just throwing that out there.
Just
stop with the Jenga, people.
I like giant, bigger than life Jenga.
I like lawn Jenga. especially when there's alcoholic beverages involved. But as far as, like, in the house, tiny OG Jenga, no. Stop. It's not entertaining. It's just way more cleanup for maybe 3 minutes of fun than you need.
I agree. So moving right along.
Let's talk digital.
Let's talk digital. And I will start with one that the minute I saw the name, I was like, I would probably buy this for my tablet. I hope they have a tablet version, which they do. They also are planning to release it for PC and Mac. So those of us who live Apple, we will not get shafted like we sometimes do. And if you happen to be a fan of suspense, murder, and intrigue, and also are a big fan of Alfred Hitchcock.
And I am.
Then A Matter of Murder might be a game you'd want to play.
Ooh, Matter of Murder.
It is a single-player game, so there's no multiplayer component. Like I said, Mac, PC, single-player. It's an adventure, casual puzzle-ish type game. And essentially, it gave me a feeling of Clue without the humor.
Definitely, yes.
So maybe even Gotford's Park meets Clue, meets Alfred Hitchcock.
Minus
Tim Curry, essentially, because the butler / maid is a female maid. But anyway, so you have come to this very smancy, fancy dinner party. And no sooner do you walk through the door, does somebody meet their fate. And by that I mean gets murdered.
They are killed.
And apparently murder happens a lot at this particular mansion. The maid is one of the first things the maid said. It's like, yeah, this is kind of common. It happens all the time. Which I was kind of like, okay, well then maybe this mansion should get shut down. But anyway.
You know, it might be time to look at other locations to live at.
Exactly. But she pretty much informs that, you know, the cops have been called. They should be here in about 2 hours. So why not meet the other guests and, oh, I don't know, poke around, observe stuff.
See if you can figure out who done it before the cops do.
Which is kind of funny because when she first brought it up, I'm like, am I a cop? Do I have detective skills?
Am I just a random person walking up to the manor? What if I only needed to use the phone because my car broke down?
Exactly. But apparently you get thrown into several different stories that happen because it's not always the same person. And it is a point-and-click adventure type of thing. So you tap on people to talk to them. You're listening to their testimony. And, I mean, I only played through the introductory level, which was a pretty simple alibi check, which the minute one person said the absolute wrong thing, I was like, oh no.
I know who's lying.
It's like, you lying, because I just talked to these two people, and they've been with each other all night in the billiard room, and you've never been to the billiard room, because this is your first time even coming to the dinner, and you got problems with Lady Pamplemousse, which is why you, like, stabbed her right quick, but...
Lady Pamplemousse?
Well, it was Dowager Lady something or other, but I'm saying Pamplemousse because I like the word Pamplemousse.
Okay.
And literally, like, as soon as I was like, oh yeah, he did it. And I was like, he did it. And then she was like, so accuse him. And I'm like, accuse. And I'm just hitting accuse. And it's not happening because I didn't officially touch the body. Because I'm just so intuitive with my
brain. You have to touch the body before you can accuse somebody.
And, like, the guy was like, yeah, if you don't touch it beforehand, you can't accuse later. I'm like, well, I'm right, right? It's that guy. And he's like, yeah, you were right. I'm like, oh, yeah. Big detective right here.
And I looked at the guy, and I was like, don't tell her that. I'll never live this down.
Because I'm so intuitive sometimes, and then sometimes not.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of reading. So if you don't like... If you like your tablet games or your PC games that are clicky adventure to not be a lot of you having to read, because there's no voice acting, so it's all reading, it might not be for you. But it had a lot of the great elements that I like in my games that have a lot of suspense and horror in them. And it's very simple, like white background, very simple drawings, because they really want you to pay attention to the narrative, which, as you guys know, I'm a big fan of narrative in my games, so... This was right up my alley, and I absolutely...
Well, what I loved about the game is the visual style of the game, because there's a lot of detail and text that lives in the sidebars on the side. And depending upon what room you're in, the sidebar is typically on the right side, but it can move to the left. What's interesting to me is the style very much looks like an artist, a fashion artist, a designer's sketches as they start creating various shapes and textures without filling in the detail of a person's face or things like that. So all of these characters feel like they're renderings for fashion outfits to yet be made, which adds to the kind of dreary, upper crust kind of feel.
I agree.
The maid has darkness around her eyes, but you don't actually see real eyes for her. You know, she has hands, but they're not clearly defined. Everyone has outfits, but there are only certain pieces of their outfit that have an element of color. Everything is pretty much in what looks to be like very hastily scrawled black, I would say almost like pencil, like lead on white.
Yeah.
And so it adds a very interesting...
eerie atmosphere.
No, it's not eerie. No, it's not
it
eerie.
It is kind of eerie in a series of unfortunate events kind of way.
No, it's just a little dark. And it's just the right amount of being dark and off, but still artsy enough to help the person who is listening to these stories and gathering this information and reading all the context text on the side to put you into a mood. And you have a pie chart that kind of updates in the top of your screen if you're watching it to let you know like how much information that you're gathering and when you're getting closer and closer to having the full picture to being at the point that you can actually now have, with the facts you have in hand and the knowledge that you have, accuse someone. I was watching Panda play the game on an iPad, and while she was doing that, I was watching two other players play it on PC, and it was just very interesting to see how two people who are completely different playing the same level have different takes to figuring things out and prioritizing the importance of gathering certain type of information more than another. So I do think that for anyone that really enjoys a good narrative and likes, you know, the puzzle aspect of figuring out who done it, A Matter of Murder is a very, very cool game to check out. Totally, totally worth it.
Any games you'd like to point out?
I do. So a game that I absolutely wrecked Panda at in the digital showcase was a game called Nothing Good Can Come of This. And the game is very simple, and we were both attracted to it because it was one of the few that was presented in an old school video game arcade type console.
It definitely pulled your eye straight to it the minute you walked down the aisle.
Just past all the tables, you were drawn right to it. And I was like, hey, they got joysticks. Let's check this out. And the game premise is very simple. I even wrote up a piece about it. I was so impressed with the game on the website. So you can check that out when you go to electricsister.com. But the game is very simple. It is a minimalist game in the truest of forms. It is a black and white game. The players are basically block. One has a dot in it, so it looks like a lowercase I, and the other one looks like a lowercase L. And so they are white blocks on a black background. And as the developer explained to us, there are two people who are locked in a room. So as the game starts, there's a tiny, tiny shaft at the top of the room because you're just looking at this 2D space, and a gun drops, and the two players have to go after the gun. So it's set up kind of like a jigsaw puzzle from Saw.
It's probably like the very first scene of Saw where two men are trapped in a room and there's a dead body in the middle with a gun.
Okay, so like that. I didn't see it, so I don't know. But
I did.
The gun drops, and so the two players fight over the gun. And shortly after, a bullet drops, and they can fight after the bullet. So in order to shoot the other person, you have to have both the gun and the bullet. So if one person picks up the gun, but the other person picks up the bullet, they each have to smack each other, because that's the only action you have, smack, jump, and shoot each other to knock the bullet loose, and then attempt to capture it by moving over it, while having the gun in their hand. And once they have both the gun and the bullet, they can shoot. And so the other character wants to evade for their life. Panda and I played. Panda got first kill, took me out first.
Yeah, but that was short-lived.
Got a little cocky.
Got very cocky, let's be honest here.
And then the 3-0 streak happened.
Yeah.
Where I started quick killing Panda on the turnaround, and he even tried the corner technique, which I patented against you. And it did not work in your favor, did it, Panda?
No.
And what I liked about this game is that it became very, very competitive very quickly. And even though the mechanics are super, super simple, you know, get gun, get bullet, shoot, punch or jump, and that's really all you have, it was very, very complex in trying to keep track of, okay, do I have bullet and gun? Do I just have gun? Oh, crap, I had bullet and gun, but they just got knocked out of my hand, so now she has bullet and gun. All right, I need to evade. And it's not like you can aim up or down. It is, again, because it is on a 2D plane, it's just straight direct shot across. So it was timing when you were up in the air and they were up in the air trying to jump and evade, getting your shot right. And if you were able to hit just a simple burst of red, hit the screen, and then you got the screen that nothing good can come of this. Now, there are some Easter eggs in the game, and I'm not going to talk about what they specifically are because I don't want to give it away. But like I said, it is a very simple game from Cartwheel Games, and it's a project of love that came out of a class assignment, which I thought was really cool. And it's only a $1 game that you can play on Linux, Windows, and Mac. So if you want a little bit of a diversion, you can play it. I'm hoping that they come out with something that allows you to easily play the game on mobile versus another player, as opposed to on desktop, because it is a co-op game. So it is a two-player game, and it's a two-player only game. It's not like you can play against the PC, because the PC would always cheat, and the AI would kick your ass, and you would always
die. You don't know that for sure.
Yeah, it would. But it is a two-player co-op game, so that means that you and someone else have to sit down to your keyboard. One person will be activating their characters using the ASWD keys, while the other person uses all 4 of the arrow keys. So that's your move and your jump and your shoot. So it's a little more complicated to try to be accurate, I found, when downloading the PC version. And by PC version, I mean I downloaded it to my Mac like 45 minutes after playing the game. But it's much more complicated and not as fluid to play on the PC, especially on a laptop. Maybe if you have a larger keyboard, it might be a little bit easier, but definitely was way more fun to play in the kiosk with a joystick style. So hopefully it will come to mobile where you actually can use game controllers, because I think like being able to use my Mad Cat's controller would be great for this game. And even though it's a D-pad and not a joystick, it would definitely, being able to control the player with the analog stick and player actions with the gel buttons would be much more comfortable than the PC keys for this. But definitely worth checking out. It's a $1 game, and the competitive and the trash talk goes up with every bullet nailed into a person.
Mm.
And what better way to go? Super violent without super realism.
Right, exactly.
Creative puzzle
solving. Cruel harshness of reality.
Creative puzzle solving that just generates trash talk.
The primitive nature of man.
It really is. So I had a lot of fun playing that game, and I'm keeping my eyes on that one, because if it comes to iOS, you better believe I'll be playing it with the controller. So that was another game in the digital showcase that I spent some time with. That was super fun. One thing that I haven't yet been able to play, but there will be a review coming on the website for it, was a game that I'd heard about before, B-Fig, and of all the games that I wanted to check out, this is one that I really wanted to make sure that I saw before I left. And it was a game called Emily is Away.
Oh my god, Emily, we're best friends. We could be best friends, or even more.
So Emily is Away is a game that is a narrative game. We've said it before, we'll say it again. Narrative is really
important. Again, hashtag.
Okay, you can stop that right now.
I love it.
No, right now. I will mute your mic.
I love it.
Seriously. You're like 3 seconds away from being muted. And then I hit the mute. But Emily Is Away is styled like the old school AOL Instant Messenger. I'm talking like PC back on Windows 95 version.
Memories.
And it is all narrative, and the game takes place across these 5 years that you as a player is speaking with this person named Emily, and there are various conversations that happen, and as the narrative unfolds in front of you, you're given response choices to give to Emily, and based off of the responses that you give, it changes how the story goes and what ultimately your ending will be. So there are some romantic things in there that are responses. There are some sad and more aggravated things that are in there. And so it's just very interesting on the kinds of stories that people will create in Emily Is Away. And I like the, again, super choose-your-own-adventure type games. Any way you slice them, I enjoy them. And so I really wanted to spend some time with this game. And we talked with the lead developer on the game for a little bit, and they were really proud of just how many different narrative and story things that they've seen just in the day of people playing the game, and how thoughtful people started to become around the choices that they were making after playing for a few minutes. It was really obvious to them that people started really getting into the narrative, and most people really, really want to stay Emily's friend and be a good friend to Emily. Basically, anybody who really reads the dialogue that's going on. So it's really meaningful to them. I've got a copy of the game. I will probably be playing that very, very soon. And I will have a much bigger review about the game on the website. But if you haven't heard about Emily Is Away, you have now. Google them, check them out. If you're a fan of narrative, you've really got to take a peek at this one. And that's all I had to say about Emily Is Away.
I love Emily.
Oh, I should not have unmuted
you. No, really, though. I do. The minute I saw the game, because we walked by it after I played A Matter of Murder, and I just saw it, and I'm like, AOL? Like, nostalgia just, like, started to, like, rise up from my stomach. And, like, I walk over, and there's this group of people who are just watching everything unfold. And, like, I saw the name, and I kind of walk up to the lead developer guy, and I'm like, so are we trying to make Emily go away? Are we, like, sad that Emily goes? Like, I was just, the minute I saw the name, I was very curious about which way. And he was so, one, he was so nice to talk to. And secondly, he was just like, it really depends on how you interact with her. I'm like, oh, a fickle mistress we have. And he was just like, take the game. And I was like, give it to me. And literally, it's one of the first things I want to dive into now that we're home from beefing. Like, I was super excited when we got our discs for it. And it looks like an old-fashioned, like, AOL.
Yeah, it
like,
does. It looks like an old disc. AOL install disc.
Like, it totally tingles all the right nostalgia notes. Like, I walked away smiling from that experience.
And so then the last thing to talk about is one that I'm going to let you talk about, Panda. And it was, I think, the second pass that we did. No, first pass that we did through Tabletop with the metagame.
Oh, gosh, yes. So it seems like every year at Tabletop that there's always a game that grabs everybody's attention, and there's usually droves and droves of people who will sit down for it, and it's usually a card game. Last year it was Slash, which really kind of put fan fiction into other fiction, and then made a fan fiction of that and just made it fun for anybody who liked to pretty much just tell stories, which,
hey, nerd, you know. I heard you like fan fiction, so I put some fan fiction in your fan fiction.
It's like, so, I heard you like Edgar Allan Poe. I also heard you like grilled cheese sandwiches. I'm going to tell you how Poe became best friends with a sandwich, and it'd be the most compelling story, and it'd be a lot of fun. This year, the card game that really kind of pulled us in is the metagame, which essentially is all of the party games that have come out in, I'd want to say, the last 3-4 years. So I'm talking Ka, I'm talking
Apples to Apples,
I'm talking Slash, I'm talking Timeline, which Timeline I like a lot better because I like the animation to it. But literally trying to figure out how things go in chronological order. And this lovely team decided to why not make a card game that would allow the owner to play all of those type of games in one deck. So instead of having your bigger than blacker box in Ka and your small box for Slash and your super small box for Timeline and have to play them all separately, why not have it all be able to be done through one deck, which is the metagame. I can't remember what her name was, the lady that we talked to.
Well, then you're a horrible person, just like me.
I am, slightly, but she was so energetic. Caroline. It was something like that. And literally, she got
business cards.
I gave her mine.
I know, but we should have asked them for cards.
Theirs.
Because we were too interested in their box.
And it's such a simply designed box, but that's not where I want to get at. So, literally what this game does is, depending on how many people you have or what kind of game you want to play, it literally has all the instructions on how to use the deck effectively the best. The lady that we talked to literally was like, look, she's like, Ka against, Ka and Slash and Apples to Apples. She's like, those are like high school, college games. I consider this like a graduate level game.
It's grad school version.
It's a grad school version of all this. So, I mean, it's got a lot of references, known and not known. It has probably the best flavor text that I've seen on cards in a while. Like, very thought out, very methodical, and also very colorful. So instead of having, like, in Cards Against Humanity, you having a black deck and a white deck, you have white cards, but then you have situational cards or, like, the theme cards, which are an array of colors. So it's like a happy rainbow in a box.
You basically have culture cards, you have opinion cards, and then there are the six ways that you can play the game.
It looked super, super fun. And, I mean, everyone was just kind of looking, because, I mean, talk about, like, the colors alone kind of pulled me to it. Because it was just so vibrant and like, hey, you want to look at me. And the lady was also super informative because apparently they play tested this pretty much anywhere that anyone would be carrying around this game. So, like, at a library, at a dark, seedy pub, at another dark and seedy pub. So that there's no excuse for you not to play this game if you have the time and you have the friends and you want something to do that can involve everybody. The smallest game you can play is between two people, and the largest game that you can play with this deck is 33. And there are expansion packs already available for purchase. So if you're a film lover, boom, there's a deck for you to add into this. If you are a literature lover, boom, there's a literature deck. And for people who bought the game at PAX this year, they got a special envelope with special PAX only cards. Which I have not looked at mine yet because I don't want to until I actually officially play the game.
You mean the B-Fig only cards?
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Mm-hmm. Yes, the B-Fig only cards.
Continue.
Which I have not looked at. I'm assuming you didn't look at yours either.
Nope.
So I'm hoping they are B-Fig related because I'm sure they will be in some manner or not. But it's completely affordable for all the playability you're getting out of this pack. And it is easily travel worthy, like easily accessed to travel with because it's not so big and threatening as the big and blacker box for Ka or not as wide as the Slash box. Like it's very, they had a really good team on how to market. And they came from, I think she said New York.
Yeah, Brooklyn.
So, it came out of a rough place, and it looks so, so good. I liked spending our time with the meta people.
Colleen. That was her name. Colleen.
There it is.
There it is. It popped in.
I liked her. And she gave us hugs.
You know,
she
was all about the hugs. Welcome. Hugs are always welcome. Always welcome.
So, yeah.
And thank you, Brain, for not being a complete douche.
Stop, Brain. You suck for being a douche.
But I think one of the things that I like so much about the metagame and why I picked it up was two things. My only drawback with Ka is that for it to really work, you need to have, like, at least five people. And two people in that group have to be really, really, really sarcastic, but also very funny for it to really be good. Because you don't always get good cards to make something super funny. So you got to be really, really witty and really, really sarcastic in order to win at Ka. And Ka is really easy to game because once you know the person who's the judge really well, you know exactly what combinations will work for them that they will like, and that's what you hit, and you can just nail it every time. Whether your thing is the funniest thing on the table or not, it's objective because it's the funniest thing to that person. With the metagame, depending upon the games that you're playing, you know, History 101, putting things in chronological order, you can't argue and win.
That's right. That's kind of black and white.
You know, and so then it just becomes the more of the conversation of you don't know Jack versus I don't know Jack, and discovering together neither one of us know Jack and we're both wrong. You know, that kind of thing. Or to have the debate game, which is basically just about getting people talking. You know, the point of Ka is getting people laughing and creating really, really just out there obnoxious conversation combinations that just crack people up. The point of the metagame is to get people talking. The game is designed to make you think, to make you talk, and maybe be a little bit clever.
Enjoy, and hopefully make sense between the two.
Right. Enjoy the flavor text that is on the cards themselves. But to really get talking about things in these various buckets, in film and in music and in entertainment, all these culture things. And I like that. I like a thinking person's game because they get even more entertaining if you have a couple of drinks. But I really was attracted to that, which is why I was like, all right, so tell me about your decks as I whip out my credit card.
Yeah, that was like the swiftest action I think you made all day.
Well, if there had actually been plushies at Rain World, I would have bought a Slugcat. would have been like the fastest.
She demoed it for us. We did a chronological game.
Yeah.
And literally it was like Proozoic art paintings and then like
the
MTV.
The first reported case of bed bugs.
And MTV.
The launch of MTV.
And then, well, at first I just saw MTV. And when I looked at it, I said, so are we talking about good MTV back when there were music videos and it was edgy for a reason? Are we talking like Jersey Shore, Kim Kardashian, like crap TV? And mm-hmm. She was like, read the flavor text. So then I did. And it was Video Killed the Radio Star. And the minute I saw it, I'm like, okay, we're talking good MTV.
Yeah.
Not the. And I mean, depending on who's playing the game, I think you're going to meet a lot of generation gaps and mm-hmm. clashes.
Yep.
And that is going to build up interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Because that's exactly what happened with us.
Yep.
And I love that. I was like, oh, okay, this game speaks to me on a level. And outside of like Ka, which I like me a good round of Ka.
I do too.
I don't know anyone who doesn't. Well, actually, no, that's not true. I know one person.
I know several people who don't.
And the reason whenever I bring it up to certain people, the ones I know who don't like Ka, they simply ask that, you know, the reason why they dislike it so much is most people do not play it by its definitive rule. Because it gets everyone involved, everyone's laughing and having a good time, and then that essence about finishing the game and winning kind of goes away, and everyone just wants to devolve into this mass of laughing idiots, and all of a sudden points don't matter, and it loses its stability. It loses what brings people together to it in the first place. Whereas, I mean, like with Slash, it can kind of happen in Slash 2 if people just want to hear stories of their favorite, you know, Doctor Who character with, like, a paddle brush. You know, you don't have to try to win the game. You can just start pulling cards and creating stories, and then the game loses its game, essentially. I mean, that doesn't really happen a lot with apples to apples unless you play it for too long, or, like, in these instances, you just stop playing by the rules. I feel like the metagame gives you so many options and variations on how to play. You can't get swept into the, oh, this is definitely the way to, like, you don't get robotic about what you're going to do. And you can change it up at the drop of a dime, essentially.
Well, the thing is, like you said, you know, Ka eventually devolves into just make people laugh. And it becomes not about getting to the 5 points and being done and starting a new game. People just want to continue the game going, especially with all the expansion packs, until they get, like, a good ways through all the cards and don't want to reshuffle and have some of the same ideas pop. I get that. But what it usually always turns into is, you know, who can make, like, the craziest combinations. And there's no conversation about what the pairing is or that conversation is. There's just the oh snap moment and the laugh moment and that kind of thing, and you move on. Whereas with the metagame, there's not that snap moment. You have to justify your chronology when you're playing History of 101. When you're debating, you've got to come up with some good arguments as to why you're putting one thing in this particular category over it being in this category where others think that it should be. And you've got to win that argument in order to win that point. You know, you're having the match game where you're trying to match your culture pieces to somebody's opinion pieces. So there's going to be conversation about that because somebody's opinion, and we all have them, are usually pretty strong.
Yep.
And so if your thing doesn't align with it, there's going to be conversations about that where you're trying to win the why it should be there and they're trying to win why it shouldn't be. They are two completely different things. There's no way to really divulge other than the only place I can see this going off the rails is debates could get very, very embattled and long with people who are really opinionated. But that also becomes a big popular point of the game is it will do that. There will be those long conversations for some people. Everyone has that really, really opinionated friend, and now there's a game that even they can be involved in. So I really like the game, and I can't wait to play it with a group of people.
Me?
So there you have it. I mean, we did more stuff at BFIG. We talked with Women in Games Boston. We'll have more stuff to talk about of things that we're going to be doing with them down the road. We played at some other games. You'll see those show up on the website too. But it was a really, really great day. And I think the thing that I enjoyed the most was that there were so many people and there was so much more space being taken over. It was just so cool to see the indie games being appreciated by so many people, by families, and not just like the people that you expect to show up to an event like that with their own die, although some people did. It was really just cool to see people exploring and talking with developers about their games and what they were trying to build and how many people were on Kickstarter trying to bring their thing to more people. It was just a super fun, real chill, but very creative day, and I can't wait to go next year.
Hopefully I won't get sick.
Yeah, hopefully you won't get sick.
Hopefully you won't get sick.
And hopefully I won't get sick. So with that, it's the time of the podcast where I remind you guys to check out all the stuff that we're writing about and our show on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can catch the podcast there as well as stuff that the entire team is writing on video games and anime, TV. If it's nerdy, we're talking about it on the website. You can catch the podcast there or you can catch the podcast in a bunch of other places, including the iTunes store, either on their desktop, in the iTunes application, or on your iOS device through the podcast application. The podcast is free. The podcast application is free. It's free entertainment, guys. So subscribe to the podcast and get it the moment we put it out on the web for your oral pleasure. Get it? For your
yeah.
See
yeah.
What I did there? You can also get the podcast on Stitcher Radio, and you can find it in the Microsoft Store by just searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. Pretty much, if it's on the web and it's got a directory of podcasts, we're probably in there. You can also make sure to check out some of the great shows and websites through our partners in our network, starting with No Borders, No Race, held down by KBD, King Baby Duck, over at B3Crew.com. New episodes go out typically on Tuesdays. Still on hiatus, but still fam. Geek Aggro, if you're needing beats for your feet, check out the archives. There's some really great mixes in there of EDM, trap, house, deep house, trance, all of that stuff. Great, great collections. Make sure to check that out. And on Thursdays, coming out of hiatus soon, Recap This, Recap That, formerly known as The Issues Program by The Issues Guy, talking about recaps of all kinds of great entertainment, Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, Big Bang Theory, like you name it. If it's a nerdy show, trust me, The Issues Guy is probably going to do a recap show about it, and you definitely want to check it out. And new to the family, but not really, The Structure Network at thestructurenetwork.com, a great array of shows, unboxings, Sensational Squad, Trophy Whores, Proven Gamers involved. Like, it's amazing, the team that is over at Structure. We're so glad to have them be part of our family, so make sure you check them out, structurenetwork.com, YouTube, Twitch videos. It's amazing how much stuff is over there, so make sure that you check them out. With that I say, ayo, sis.
Hello.
What shit you digging this week?
Games, B-Fig, Asgard, all those things rolled into one.
Okie dokie.
And poop.
Well, the poop game is also fun, but we'll talk about that another time.
What about you, sis?
I gotta just say that I'm just digging the gaming community. Like, it was such a chill day, and playing games and talking with people about playing games was just awesome. So, the gaming community, I love you guys so much, so hard. I can't even with you guys.
I can.
So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye.